The Bizarre Cast contains adult themes and explicit content. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Bizarre Cast with myself, Richard. And today, very special guest. Some know him as Alfonso, but most of the world know him as John. It is the legendary video game designer, programmer, developer, and director, John Romero. John, welcome to the show today.
Hey, thanks for having me here.
An absolute pleasure to have you on. You should need no introduction, but I do have a far-ranging audience. Would you like to give a little bit of introduction of who you are, more so than my grand intro?
Well, I've been making games for 42 years now. I co-created the first-person shooter genre and made a bunch of popular shooters at the beginning of the genre, like Wolfenstein 3D, the Doom series, and Quake.
I think that's really underplaying it, really, with 42 years under your belt.
Yeah.
Certainly. Definitely the godfather of the very popular FPS genre, as you did mention. But now you've found yourself, after 42 years, you're 6 years in Ireland. So I think the only thing we're missing today is an Australian in the US to complete the triangle here.
Yeah.
How have you ended up in Ireland? Just about 6 years now.
Yeah. My wife got a Fulbright fellowship in 2014, and it was to study the Irish game industry and to offer suggestions for improvement. So we spent 3 months here driving everywhere, meeting people, you know, in government, in universities, in game companies, indie developers, you name it. We met lots of people. And after 3 months of doing that, when we went back to the US, we decided that we want to move to this country because the gaming scene is just heating up, and it's really exciting, and lots of people are energized here, and we just love the country, and my wife's family comes from Ireland.
Yes, I did. I have played the recent release from Romero Games, Empire of Sin, and I do know one of the characters was my build. Frankie Donovan is based off her grandfather. Yeah. Do I have that correct?
Yeah. Yep.
And I must commend you, actually, on Empire of Sin and the whole team. It's the first game I've ever seen that didn't make me want to claw my eyes out with the twee Irish accent. You really did it justice. So I do commend you on not making us sound like fools. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Frankie is one of the guys that works in our company. His name's Ian O'Neill, but he is our combat designer, and he did the VO for Frankie.
Super. Yeah. No,
he's Irish.
He was very good. Even the Cork characters where I'm from myself.
Yeah,
I was like, "Ooh, they sound good. This is good."
Yeah, because we hired a VO actor from Cork.
Yeah, no, thank you. Seriously, thank you.
We wanted to be as authentic as possible. It's funny because we had people commenting on the Cork accent, just saying that's not Irish.
Yeah, no, it's very flowery. I play mine down a small bit.
But yeah, we wanted to be authentic with our characters, and we wanted the people who were voicing the characters to be the type of character that they were voicing. So we had a gender non-binary character in the game, and that's the kind of person that we had voicing that character. We had two Native American tribal characters from the Navajo and I believe the Cree, and they were both voiced by Navajo and Cree speakers, and they speak their language. They don't speak any English. So the game has a lot of different accents, and that they're all authentic.
Yeah, and I know there's obviously lots of material out there for people who want to hear about your early life and works. So just at the time that you've come to Ireland and you said the gaming scene was just heating up, how did you feel like the talent pool was, or what actually drew you to set up a company at that time?
Well, for one, we know that you can start a company anywhere in the world. It doesn't matter where you're at. We started in software in Louisiana. You know, we took the company up to Madison, Wisconsin. Like, none of these places are hotbeds of anything. you know, game related. So it didn't matter where we started. We just wanted to live in a really great place. And we found that there are a bunch of game developers here in Galway itself that are probably 10 different game companies. But there's also a lot of technology companies here. Ireland is the second largest exporter of software in the world. There's so many companies here, you know, high-tech companies with lots of programmers. There's SAP, there's Cisco, you know, there's just lots of tech in this country. And so we didn't have a worry about getting programmers, but all the programmers that we got are from games. So we're just really happy to be able to attract talent. You know, we've brought some Irish back into Ireland that had left because there weren't jobs here. So we brought them back in, and they've been working with us for years now.
Yeah, it's quite commendable, because I even see recently, like, you're on a bit of a hiring spree. So definitely things look to be heating up. And I know you like to keep your cards close to your chest. But with Empire of Sin, I know you're constantly adding expansions to that. And you've recently announced you're working on Sigil 2. Is Sigil 2, is that just a solo project, or do you actually have the whole team working on that at the moment?
Yeah, that's solo, just like Sigil 1. You know, I'm basically just doing that. And Empire of Sin, we're about to finally release our first big DLC. So we've been working really hard on it. It's getting really close. It's looking really, really good. So we're really happy with it. And that's like what everybody's pouring everything into.
Yeah, I have my own little fan theory, though. I know you're doing Sigil 2. That's based on a Doom 2. So it will be like a massive wad.
Yes, it can be big. Will
Sigil 3 be in the id Tech 2 engine, the Quake engine? That's my theory.
We don't have anything solid. Like, nothing is really set for that. We don't have a design or anything for it. So it's just, you know, there's an idea of doing another thing. But what it turns out to be, can't say. We've got several ideas.
Okay, interesting. I was trying to snag myself a Tech 2 scoop today.
I know, you know, back in the 90s, I would have said all kinds of stuff, but but not now.
You have to watch yourself, yeah, definitely. And just to touch on Sigil, is that something that you control yourself? Like, could you turn Sigil into like a full Romero Games title, or how does that work for you?
Yeah, I mean, Sigil, but right now, Sigil is just like the Doom mod stuff that I give away for free.
Yeah.
So it's like a community project. The community's not doing it, but I'm making it for the community. And Sigil worked out really well. People really liked it. It's you know, so well liked that it's software licensed Sigil, so they can have it on all of their Doom ports.
Yeah.
And Sigil 2 is basically now taking advantage of all the new monsters and textures and everything that's in Doom 2. So that's basically what it is. I'm just kind of still sticking to, it's a Doom mod for Sigil 2.
Sure.
So that's the plan. People are excited about it. Lots of people want it. You know, it's one of those things where I normally wouldn't talk about what I'm doing before I do it, because people will say it took forever to get Sigil 2 out because I talked about it. If I didn't say what I was working on, they wouldn't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because in doing my homework, I was pretty much doing the crash course. I was doing Sigil, Daikatana, Quake, Commander Keen, everything. I was like trying to stuff it all in the last couple of weeks. So I did notice from like the Doom 1 and Doom 2 to Sigil, it was definitely a lot more refined in terms of the map design and even the artistic flair within the levels. Was that something that, since you had so much time to look at it, or is it just nearly 30 years of being in the engine that you actually knew what to get out of it, or did you attack that a bit differently?
So with Sigil, so the funny thing is, like, I made a couple new levels in 2016 and I released them, It was E1M8B and E1M4B, just like a month later or a couple months later. And up until that point, I hadn't done any mapping in Doom at all. Like, I hadn't even looked at it map-wise. I played Doom, a deathmatch, lots of times for a long time, but I never was in the creation mode, and I never thought about making something, you know, in Doom. So I hadn't been thinking about, like, even how the editor would work, you know, like, I didn't even know what editor that I would have used to make levels. But when I came up with the idea at the very beginning, probably February of 2018, to make another episode of Levels for Doom's 25th anniversary, then I looked up, oh, it's Doom Builder 2. That's the one that everybody's using. It's the best function, you know, it's got the best functionality and everything. And because I run on a Mac, Doom Builder 2 is a Windows only program. So I basically use my, Windows VM, VM Fusion that runs on the Mac. So Sigil was made on a Mac in a Windows VM. And I even ran the levels in the VM. Like, I run Doom in the VM, and it's 60 frames a second. It's super fast, you know, it runs really well. And so I could just, like, you know, my whole screen looks like I'm on a Windows machine, even though I'm not, but it's great. So I can just, like, make it iterate, and getting into it was just really learning, what the keys were on the keyboard for using that level editor, but making the levels, I already knew all that. Like, I don't forget anything. So it was just like, yeah, I know all the data that goes on the fronts and backs of lines and sector defs and all of that stuff. That's just like, I did that for years. Mm. So there wasn't any difficulty in just like jumping in it and just starting to map stuff. It was, you know, like what it always has been is, what is a good idea? You know, I need to come up with a good idea for the level. I need it to look good when it starts. So that was the only challenge, is like coming up with something cool. And my thought with Sigil was, I want it to look like you just finished Thy Flesh Consumed, and now you're playing a fifth episode that just came out back in the 90s. So I'm not going to go ultra detail mode or use, you know, advanced GZ Doom features that are Quake-like, you know, like, I'm not going to do scripting and all kinds of stuff. I'm just going to keep to the same thing, which means keep to the same level of tech as Doom 2 or Doom 1. And so for me, it was, what can I do with the limitations I have in here? And so I wanted to have like a through line in all of the levels that had a consistent design addition that I hadn't seen in any levels that I'd made or we'd made it in. And that was the creation of the Baphomet's eye that you shoot to get either
a fun one.
Yeah, to get through something or to find a secret. But every time you saw one, good things were going to happen. So that was the important thing, was like, you, when you saw one, you needed to know it was a good thing. And it was either going to help you progress or it was just going to give you something cool. So that idea went through all the levels and people really liked it. You know, I've watched a million plays through Sigil, and when people discover that stuff, they're always talking about it. And, oh, that's really cool, because I hadn't seen this kind of thing before in Doom, but it's been there the whole time. It's just that I decided that I was going to use an almost never used line trigger. And I was going to use an almost never used sprite together. And that was the Evil Eye sprite, which was used maybe once or twice in the original Doom, and the line trigger that was used maybe once or twice.
Yeah, it did actually really stand out, because playing it myself, I would say, and I don't know, is this harsh or intentional, it was like quite a trolly expansion. Like, there was definitely stuff where you're like, oh my God, I can't believe you're throwing this at me. And I really was thinking, because it was just your project, like, it was just like, John is just messing with us, like the pit with all the cacos coming up. There was other parts where like wall is falling for like 20 minutes and stuff. And like, is this wall happening?
And the door that just keeps opening.
and there was just like the little chasm thing, and then like a lost soul pops out of nowhere. And I was like, oh my God, I hate it and I love it.
The whole thing is supposed to be very difficult. If you're playing it in ultraviolet, it's supposed to, for me, I wanted it to be almost not finishable in ultraviolet. So it was going to be a massive challenge for anybody, and that you would have to like go down to normal difficulty
I
or
had to bump it
whatever.
down. I was too
Yeah.
much of a noob.
So it needed to be very difficult for the people who had been playing for decades. So people were very happy with it. They were also happy with the because I made all the levels, I can ramp the difficulty over the levels. So you're not playing the second level that's crazy difficult and the third level's easy, you know, like it needed to ramp in difficulty. So people really liked the fact that it ramped correctly versus like they flesh consumed, which didn't ramp correctly. But yeah, lots of really good feedback. It was really fun to make. I had about five people who were in my Slack channel just for Sigils development, going over every piece of data, every byte of data that's in the Doom, every single one of those levels to make sure there wasn't anything wrong. And they found a million wrong things, you know, like I had to fix so much stuff that these people are just they're experts at Doom mapping. And every little piece of tech and every weird thing that every source port possibly could do, you know, and they know how to make it so it's completely vanilla compatible and then what it's not compatible and what's okay today. And anyway, it was really great having a group of experts there to double check that I wasn't going to go out with something that people would just go, wow, that screwed up. You know, I wanted it to be fun and difficult, and so they gave me their gameplay impressions as well as the technical feedback.
Well, that leads nicely into the first listener question, which is from Flambeau himself.
All right.
He wants to know Sigil Beast Boxers when? When are they happening? I think he
Well,
means
he's
Sigil
they
Underpants.
no the Beast Box, right? But oh, did he say Beast Boxers?
Beast Boxers, yeah.
That is such a great idea. My God, why didn't he tell me that in the channel?
He wanted me to ask you. He was holding back.
Yes. Is this live?
No, it's not. It's not live.
Okay, well, that was amazing that he said
No, he has a few
that.
questions for you today that he's been hiding.
He's great.
No, he's good fun, Flambeau. Shout out to Flambeau when you're listening to this, like next week
Yeah.
when we edit. Just to peel it back then, because you obviously took that up after a good couple of years from working on Doom, obviously. And I heard you mention previously, by the time that you got into id, you had about 86 games under your belt. So for that sort of time frame with id Software, where everything was riding high, did you sort of have any idea at that stage that you hit like a peak or something, or it was like the peak of just everything flowing after 86
Yeah.
games, or did you think it could go higher and higher?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, my whole career since I started programming games from, let's say, 1982 has gotten better and better every single year that I had been making games. There was a plateau in, I'd say, 85 and 86 and half of 87. I was kind of plateauing. I was still making games, but then at the end of 87, I finally got my first industry job. But before that point, I had sold lots of games already. And so I was just learning more, getting better. People are noticing. I'm putting stuff out. I'm getting in magazines, that kind of stuff. And then when I got my job at Origin in 1987, I really wanted that job. And I did everything to get that job. It was really great. Then I moved across country. I got married, moved across country, had a kid, had my first full-time job all within 4 months. So it was a real big change, and it was really fun. 8 months after starting my dream job, which is what that was at Origin, it was just a dream job. I couldn't think of any other job that would be better than working at Origin. 8 months after I started, I left because I co-founded another company. I'd already started a company before I went to Origin, and I'd been publishing that for, you know, 10 years before, you know, or 7 years before. And then I get the job at Origin, then I leave and start another company. And then I leave that company after 9 months, start another company. and then had that for a year and a half until I started id. And so that was the id was my fourth startup. Before id, I'd say I had probably 60 some games, probably, because id in 1991 we made 10 games just at id. So we, you know, we were making a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And Doom was game number 90.
Yeah, no, it's quite impressive, because I can't barely do a function on an Excel spreadsheet, so I don't know how you've been pushing out all the games. I find it very impressive. I very surface level know what's going on. I'm just really like dipping my toes lately into PC gaming, because I've immersed myself in the community. I've nearly infiltrated the Discord to actually speak with you today. I've all gone right. all the way up to the rank of admin. So it's finally paid off.
Awesome.
So just in terms of that, then, you finally put your name to the company after so long. What made you finally put the name to it?
Well, we figured that, you know, because people know my name, that we would get some, you know, easy attention, you know, quick attention, if we actually just named the company after Romero, and it's Brenda and I only. So we're both Romeros.
Yeah.
Why not name the company Romero Games? We did have a company before this called Loot Drop, but that was a couple of years before we got married.
Right.
So we've been running a company together for, it'll be 11 years this November.
Oh yeah, no, that's superb going. And do you, that's another question definitely worth asking. How do you find it working with your spouse? Is that easy or hard?
It's great. It's great. You know, she has tons of experience. She started the industry in 81. So she's been making games, you know, as long as I have. And she's great at it. We could talk about it, you know, forever. We like doing a lot of other stuff too. But it's really great working with Brenda. We've been working together every day for the whole time. You know, we've worked on games together for more time than we've not worked on games together. I mean, since we've been together, we worked on the same game most of the time. So that's pretty great.
No, it is great, because we're down in Sydney, which is having a terrible lockdown at the moment. So I'm sitting side by side with my wife.
For nice.
Different companies, but I love it too. So it's good to hear that it's a good working relationship there.
Oh, yeah.
So superb. Because I often see on Instagram that you do a lot of traveling around Ireland. So what would be your favorite place in Ireland?
Jeez, well, because we're in Galway, that the next place is Kerry.
Probably the best place, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we love it. We love Donegal. We love Kerry. We love staying at Ballyfin, really nice hotel. You know, we love staycations, and you know, we love to just drive all over the place in the country just to see the little villages everywhere. You know, because that's our favorite thing, is to just find something really small and really cool. Like Adair's insanely cool, but it's like it has a constant row of cars going through it in both directions, because it's such an amazing town. But to find other places that are very similar is really, really cool, to just drive everywhere. And I mean, I remember I went to Ballymaloe one time from Limerick, and that was a drive I'd never been on, and I just had to do it myself because Brenda was busy during the day. And so my day was going to be taking a cooking class down there, and I drove there, and it was like driving through Kerry. It was like driving from Belfast to the Giant's Causeway, you know, along the coast. It was just beautiful. You know, it was one of the most beautiful drives, going from Limerick to where Ballymaloe was, which is just out in the country. And you know, the whole country is like that. It doesn't matter where you drive, really. It's just everything looks great.
Yeah, no, it's fabulous, because I even got engaged up in the Giant's Causeway. So it was
nice.
It's such a majestic spot up there.
It is. Crazy. Yeah, we love it there. The visitor center is amazing. It looks so good.
It's brilliant. Yeah, no, it's a lovely country. I did run away from my sins, but I'll be back eventually.
Yeah.
And speaking of sins then, as the icon of sin himself, what's the biggest sin you're willing to admit here on the podcast today?
Probably I killed somebody. No, I'm just kidding.
You kill someone in Doom. You just like
yeah,
punctuate everything in Doom.
I don't know. I don't really, probably going really fast in my car, like beyond what anyone should do. Back when I had my Testarossa, I went 175 miles an hour one time.
Ooh,
really fast.
Yeah, that's a good one to admit then.
I know, it was like, it's so fast that nothing could move on the road in front of me for like the next mile. Otherwise I'd have to like turn the steering wheel a little bit. And that's not a good idea at that speed.
Yeah, yeah, I'll keep my sins under my hat that I don't have on right now. So speaking of Ballymaloe and the food, I have unearthed the Galway Mexican, and tying in nicely to another game that you've also made with your son Dunvin, Gunman Taco Truck. Would you ever consider packing up the programming for a food truck? Because the food looks amazing.
Yeah, someday I'm going to do that. I'll probably start really small and kind of slowly go up the way that all the successful places in Galway work. You know, like the Dobros did that. And
oh, Dobros.
Amazing. I mean, they're like, when you open the front door of our office, they're right in front of us. Like, that's where
is that where you are?
Oh. Yeah, right there next to the Dobros.
I must have missed it. I was there like 5 years ago. I didn't realize.
Oh, yeah. You know what? 5 years ago, we weren't in that office. We were around the corner. So we moved in 2017.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So just a year after. But we, Il Vicolo has started small. The Handsome Burger guys started small. All the places, they test out the market by just going small to see if there's something there. And I know that that Mexican food is huge. It would be massive, like actual Mexican food, not Chipotle ripoffs.
If you could do it properly, yeah, there's like, I love it.
Yeah, you can. You know how. I mean,
we had fajitas tonight. It was quite good. It wasn't in preparation to speaking with you. It was just on the menu anyway.
That's so funny. Yeah, fajitas are an American thing. That's not even a Mexican thing.
Oh, right. Okay. I'm being schooled here.
Yeah, there's no real Mexican food around. And it's funny, even going to Mexican restaurants in the United States, which have a lot of like very authentic, you know, really real Mexican restaurants.
Yeah.
There's food that they don't even sell in the restaurant that they eat at home.
Yeah.
You know, it's like really great stuff. And, there's one food, it's called a tamale, and that's not common at other Mexican restaurants either, just because the time investment involved in making a tamale, it takes a while to make it. It's not like you can just throw it together really quick in a couple minutes. It takes an hour plus.
Yeah.
So yeah, food wise, planning on doing that at some point. Start small, see how it goes. We'll see.
That's good to know.
But I'll never throw in the programming though. No, never throw in the game dev, because that's always a fun thing.
Yeah, yeah. You'll have a laptop like in the corner of the food truck when on the downtime.
Yeah. God, no, I can't even imagine that.
That's fantastic though. No, that's really exciting, because we have dreams of like doing a homestead. You know, having bees and vegetables and have chickens and stuff. So
yeah,
it's definitely good to have something in the back burner like that. So where? Oh, yeah. Where did you learn the recipes? Was it from your abuela, or what? Where did learn the food?
Totally, yeah. My whole family on my dad's side is all Mexican. They all speak Spanish. Mm-hmm. They all cook. Like, it's funny. Like when you talk about like maybe some other cultures, food isn't the number one thing, but with Mexicans, it is the absolute number one thing. It's family and food. That they are the same thing almost. So food is a huge, huge thing with Mexicans. So your family, like everybody is taught just how to make everything, you know, yeah, how to make rice and beans and, you know, carne asada and, you know, all the different salsas and sauces and everything. So it's a cultural thing. And I totally got that. I grew up in Tucson, Arizona, and Tucson, Arizona is the only UNESCO World Heritage Site of gastronomy in the world. And that's where I grew up, and that's how I learned how to cook that food. Nice. So I'm excited to bring Sonoran Mexican food, you know, to Galway.
Well, I need to, once the borders open back up, I might be knocking on your front door.
Yeah, yeah. That'll probably be the first thing we do, is have people at the house.
Oh, that'll be good. Yeah, because I know you do the yearly Quake debt match.
Yeah, debt jam.
Yeah, I won't be able to make it. I was extended an invite, so I do thank you and Maisa as well. She's amazing on the Discord.
Yeah, moving, you know, flying from Australia is crazy.
Yeah, no, like we haven't left here in 3 years now, because once we decided that we were looking to maybe go back, it was like lockdown.
So yeah, that's
a bit kind of crazy. And just mentioning Quake, I do have a question for you. And there was real contentious debate, and some people say to me that you've already settled this question, but I'm going to give you my pitch. The question is, do Shamblers know fur? No fur. It was the question.
I know, it's so funny, because people, that's like, what other thing in Quake other than that are people going to say? And the thing is, that answer is directly from Adrian Carmack.
Okay.
He's the one who created the Shambler.
Oh, okay, yeah, because we all had our theories. I was the ringleader, really, for the fur team of, it wouldn't shoot lightning if it wasn't for a static fur electricity.
And, yeah.
It's a blood-stained fur as well, like matted fur.
Yeah.
But I guess that's not the case then, definitively.
No, Adrian says no.
I'll have to hunt Adrian down and like twist his arm. It's like, it is fair, Adrian, you're wrong.
Yeah, you're wrong for making it that way.
Okay, so we get one layer closer to the truth. I need to hunt down Adrian now, is the next one.
Have fun with that.
Is he like in hiding? Is he like really...
He's out of the game industry since 2004. So he has nothing to do with games. He doesn't even play them. He's just out. He's just traveling and having a fun time. He doesn't work.
So with Adrian out of the game, but you're still in the game, what's a typical day for you from morning to finish? I know you're really busy and I won't keep you much longer. So what's a typical game for John Romero?
Jeez. 9:30, do whatever I can before stand up at 9:45. And then, who knows, you know, every day is different. It's like meetings, maybe interviews, you know, try to work on stuff. You know, I have so much work to do, so many things. So it's just constant. And that is like until I eat. I also make dinner. So I cook, you know, probably around 5:30. And then at 6:30, I'm back to work until, 11, 12, maybe later, you know. That's basically what it's like. And then on the weekends, try to take time, you know, like not to do any work on the weekends, except that a lot of times there's like right now, there's just too much stuff to do. I have to work. So I think this weekend we're going to a hotel, but I have to bring my computer and everything, because I'm going to work the whole time I'm there.
Right. Like with your role in the company, and you obviously have lots of people under you and working away, like what exactly is the work you're doing? Are you like programming the whole time? Are you organizing different, like,
I'm doing lots of biz stuff, lots of business stuff, and doing right now a whole bunch of Empire of Sin work, programming and other stuff. You know, I'm in Jira just like everybody else, so lots of tasks. So I'm trying to burn my list down.
Okay, yeah. Well, you finally take this off the list. I know we had a little bit of a scheduling juggling going on the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
It's finally been happening. It's actually been 5 years in the making, this interview. I was on the hook with Brenda in 2016 and she was like, yeah, what day suits you? John's away this week. That was the beginning.
Yeah.
So the circle's finally complete. I can just shut down the podcast now.
That's funny. The COVID has been really great for staying home, which makes it easier to do interviews and everything. I flew out Friday and flew back Monday to Romania, and I was at the Eastern European Comic Con for the whole weekend.
I saw that, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where I spent my weekend working.
I know I'm very honored to be getting an hour of your time today. So I do thank you for that slice. I know you're very busy. It's like anytime you pop up on the Discord, we're like, oh my God, he's here.
I know it's so rare because it has to happen, you know, in the evening, unless something big has happened and I need to jump on Discord. But Mesa usually handles that, you know, during the day. And like, I have a big list of Discord stuff that I have to do. So I'll eventually get to it after the higher priority stuff.
And yeah, so with all doing all that work and being constantly flat out, what actually keeps you motivated after 40 years of work? Because I'm about 6 years into my career and I'm ready for the farm at this stage. So how do you keep going?
Geez, you know, there's so much to learn, so much to do, lots of ideas. I mean, Sizzle 2, it's so fun making Doom levels. Like, you know, I could just do that all day if I had nothing else to do. It would be super fun. But that's just one project, you know, there's so many other projects out there. So, it's always, you know, it's like 150 games, you know, just, you keep on having ideas and you keep on wanting to make those ideas. You know, it's, that's what I do. That's what I wanted to do when I was, 15 years old, was just make games all day. So that's what I've been trying to do.
Yeah, no, it's clearly working. I mean, we're talking about it today, 42 years later. I think lot of people, you know, it's, I try to avoid most of like the doomy topics because I know you talk about them like all the time. So I'm trying to keep it fresh.
That's funny because some people like will comment, you know, on in wherever YouTube comments or whatever, just saying, all he does is talk about Doom. And it's like, it's because I've been asked about Doom all the time. What do you think?
I made a conscious effort to avoid the topics as much as I could.
I don't have a problem talking about Doom.
I know, but you just like you. If people want the answers, it's like they're out there. I just want to ask what his favorite food is, guys. You know.
Well, Chili Colorado.
Okay. because that was Neo Kesh's question. He wanted to know what that was.
Yeah, Chili Colorado is great.
Super. And another little fun question for you. Do you enjoy correcting Sandy Peterson?
So funny. Not really, because I like Sandy. And it's like when he misremembers something, I always want to make sure that history is not, you know, branching off somewhere because of a bad memory or whatever. I just want to make sure that I have hyperthymesia. I actually remember this stuff. So this is why this happened, you know, and this happened, this led to this and this led to this. So, it's, you know, and he trusts me that I, you know, that I remember better and all that, but I'm always nice about it because Sandy's a great guy.
Yeah. It's the, I hope you're doing well from people. It's absolutely
if you start
brilliant.
A sentence out with that, hey Sandy, hope you're doing well.
it's turned into just a complete meme now that like no one can take it seriously. It's so good.
I know.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's funny because the comments are the best, you know.
Yeah,
like, whenever that happens, the comments are great.
Because I know you're involved with the first person shooter documentary by VC VC. I do know one of their directors for they did the 80s sci-fi and the horror. I've had him on the podcast a few times. David Weiner.
Nice.
It was funny then when it was announced like Sandy Peterson is on the panel and every single comment like under the tweet was like, ask him, is he doing well?
Exactly. Everybody knows.
Like every single comment, I was like, "Oh, this is."
Was that on the Kickstarter?
This was on Twitter. It was like, "Oh, announcing Sandy Peterson." Oh, yeah, it was okay. Like, hope he's doing well. Like every single comment.
I think I saw that.
It was too good.
It was hilarious.
And then as well, like after 42 years, so you've been working longer than I've been alive. Has there been like what's been your biggest regret professionally, or is there any one thing that you change in particular over those 42 years? Or do you tend not to focus on the bad stuff?
Yeah, I definitely would have started Ion Storm with just Tom Hall, just us two and not any of the other people that we brought in. You know, things would have been different there. It would have been, you know, I may have made the same mistake in the way Daikatana was created, but at least it wouldn't have been such a hard time doing it. It was a hard time doing it because of all the drama that was happening outside of my dev team. Because that drama affected the dev team as well. So that would have been a better idea because I started three companies with Tom, and he's just, you know, super honest, trustworthy, capable, you name it. He's really great to have around. So it's always turned out, even if like our mobile company, Monkey Stone Games, didn't turn out spectacularly, we had a really fun time. I mean, it was one of the most fun times ever creating stuff with Tom at that company. So yeah, he's always really fun to work with. And even after Id and then Ion Storm and then Monkey Stone, when Brendan and I started Loot Drop, he joined after that too, you know, as a game designer. So we've worked at four companies, or five companies, because we worked at Softdisk too. So five companies.
Yeah, he seems like a really cool guy, Tom Hall. I know he's an honorary member in the Discord, Keen Daddy.
Yeah. He's the best.
Yeah, because I only, as I mentioned earlier, just played Daikatana this week, and the first level with frogs and mosquitoes, it was a far cry from some of the other games, the opening levels. But
oh, totally. I know. I think I was playing a game recently that had some small characters like that, and I was like, oh, don't make the Daikatana mistake, you know? And the funny thing is, Daikatana was also made, like Sigil, to be very difficult.
You're right. I had to put it down to the small one, yeah. The lowest.
Yeah, the mosquitoes and stuff are supposed to be hard to hit, but that's not the way that people expected it. You know, they expected something that was going to be more welcoming and like a giant adventure, but instead they got annoyed by the pesky stuff that was too small to shoot. Yeah, so it could have been, everything about that game could have been so much better, but, you know, it's just one game out of 150.
Yeah, well, that was kind of ties into the next question then. If there was any project or something you would do in the future, if you had like unlimited funds and resources, is there anything that you'd redo or see from the ground up?
Well, if I was going to redo something, interestingly, I would probably redo Ravenwood Fair.
Okay.
It had 25 million players every month for a while. It's probably one of the biggest games I've made. It's a really cute game, has a totally different audience than shooters, but it was really fun to make it and had a really, just people that don't normally play games got into that game, and because it was, you know, a casual game on Facebook, and and just, you know, when it shut down, the hundreds of messages of people wondering where it went, and, you know, just their outpouring of grief and everything was just like, God, these people love this game so much. And even now, it's been shut down for 8 years, even now there's still messages being posted on the Facebook page thread, you know, basically just saying, when is it coming back? This is one of my best games when I was a kid. When you were a kid, what am I? But yeah, it was a really fun game. It was really fun to make. And I know that if I could bring it back, that, you know, it would have an audience already.
Yeah, that's interesting now that you'd pull that one out. I wouldn't have expected that.
So, yeah, I know, because there's lots of other things to pull out.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because, you know, people do different things and it's like, well, I had the most time doing this. Like, we don't know behind the scenes or anything like that. We're just like the players. So it's always interesting to get those insights.
Yeah, making that game is a mini novel.
Yeah, because that was like a weird golden era of gaming as well, like all those Farmvilles and
you
have the Facebook games. I think, have they been more or less phased out now, those ones?
They just, they're not as popular. You know, Zynga, which was one of the biggest drivers on the Facebook platform for games, they had to pivot to mobile. You know, they had to get onto a different, like the fact that like they were limited by Facebook in how much money they could make. And they, you know, like nobody wants to have a limitation by another company on their income earning potential. So, you know, it was smart for them to pivot to mobile and just get off of that platform and, you know, get on their own. So, so that was the strategy, and that's what they've been doing for a long time now. But back when it happened, when it blew up, you know, like the game industry came into the space to find out what is this. And what we found was a really interesting design pattern that we'd never seen before in any game, any traditional games. And it was fun to learn about and to just kind of see that audience and to figure out all of the things that were figured out about how those people play games and how much they know and what they like and how we could innovate on that, you know, that kind of game, the amount of game literacy that they had. To make something that they would really latch on to. And it was really cool, you know. And then the bubble kind of popped in 2012, you know, the end of 2012, and everyone was pulling out of it.
Okay. And I'll just ask two little fun ones now just to break up the other questions. I think this is a listener question, but I can't remember who asked it. What does the Soulsphere taste like, in your opinion?
Probably what I would think is it's probably the best. It's probably Vitalin. It's pure Vitalin.
Vitalin. Not familiar with Vitalin.
Played Commander Keen. Keen not 4. Fully. Yeah, Keen 4. You get all this little Vitalin stuff. It's like it's water. It's like life water.
Oh,
and. It's blue. It looks like it's full of water with a face in it. So let's say it's Vitalin. So it's in the universe. Same okay. Universe.
Excellent. I would have said it was like blue raspberry or something. Except
yeah.
Electric.
Could be.
And this is another one. And this is another one being asked kind of by me, but kind of by a lot of people. Certainly something that I can't do myself. What is your hair care routine?
It's really simple. It's shampoo, condition, blow dry, and put some hair oil on it. There's nothing, no special shampoos or conditioners or anything, just because it's genetic. So I really had nothing to do with it. So I just do my hair normally, and, hair oil is the last little bit thing to just keep it from flying away just because it's long. It's pretty easy. It just takes time to do.
Yeah, because this was a follow-on with Cheeky Flambeau as well. Do you tuck your hair above or below the blanket at night, or how do you sleep with the hair?
Yeah, I have to have it up. I can't lay on a pillow with my hair like laying all over the place.
So how does it work? Is it like a bun on top or?
No, just in the back. Just kind of like this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like I have right now.
Okay. I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't so. My genetic lottery wasn't too great, as you can see. So I just have a quarantine beard at the moment, seeing how long I can get.
Yeah. Nice.
Excellent. So what would be, I suppose we have time for maybe two more questions. What would be your desert island game then? And it has to be of your own creation.
Oh, well, that's Doom.
Doom. Definitely. And if it wasn't Doom, then if it was something else?
Probably Minecraft.
And unless, why is that just...
unless it's one of the best games ever made. It's limitless, you know, it's procedurally generated worlds. You just like get tired of the one that you're in, start another one. But if you're gonna talk about like I'm on a desert island, but I can play with a bunch of people. There is internet somehow. Satellite internet. Yeah, World of Warcraft then.
World of Warcraft. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how much longer Blizzard keeps his doors open, given all the recent news.
I know.
Okay, so last question, and we'll just wrap up nicely. What keeps you drawn to the esoteric, the satanic, and the Lovecraftian? Has it always tickled your fancy all these years?
Yeah, it's just, I think it's because it's mysterious to a lot of people. And for me, it's like, can't be fun the way that Ozzy's satanic, which he isn't. He's just Ozzy, but, you know, he's, that works for him. You know, like that's for his image, it's just fun. And for me, it's fun. Like Lovecraftian stuff is, just great stories, you know, really makes, you know, none of it exists, but it's just like, what a cool world that he built. And I think that, you know, around hell, there's also a really great mythos that's huge. And those both have a lot of material in them that you can use for all kinds of stuff.
Super. And if you'll indulge me just one more, I'll squeeze in one last one. Am I correct in saying, and I'll edit this out if I'm incorrect, you're a grandfather now at this stage, are you? Have I seen
Jeez, online? For a while, for years now, yeah.
Okay, so I'll ask the question then. So you're 42 years in the industry, a veteran by all the standards involved. You've been through so many processes. But as a father and now a grandfather, how do you think your views have changed just as like a man and just on your legacy as a whole? Because I'm childless, so I'd like to see you're up there on a pedestal in the gaming world, but you also have a legacy in front of you through your children and grandchildren. How has that changed over the years?
Well, it's great because they're part of the dev team, you know. they live in a house that is all games, and some of them have picked up on it. Some of them haven't, and it's totally fine that they haven't, you know, because they're going to go their own way. But the ones that have been just really great. You know, like the oldest son has been a programmer in the industry since 2009. We work with him every day. You know, he's in California and we're here, and he's programming, you know, he's programming and doing a great job. The Donovan, of course, with Gunman Taco Truck, he's one of the biggest game players around. He knows so many design patterns and play patterns, and so he really internalizes gameplay really well and has really good thoughts about it. And then Meza, as you know, is a game designer and a writer, community management, etc. Avalon makes levels for games. She loves it. She loves playing games all the time. But she's going to do something that's not games, but the games will always be part of everything that she does. Hmm. Yeah, so yeah, there's a lot of game playing in the family, you know, everywhere. Even our granddaughter, and we just got a new grandson. She reads all the time. She loves reading books. She's really smart, and you know, we'll see where she goes. You never know when a kid's really young where they're gonna go. You have no idea. They could just take a right turn at some point and get interested in something because of the friends that they have, or you know, something that they just discovered.
Well, that's absolutely fantastic, John. And I wish I could speak to you just that little bit longer today, but I know, as I said, you're a very busy man. Hopefully at some stage, if I make it up to Galway, I can see you in person and get you a Dr. Pepper, as you so love. Yeah. I won't say a pint of Guinness because,
exactly.
For the audio listeners there, that's Dr. Pepper was held up to the camera. So. I knew it was on standby. Oh, nice. I need to get myself one of those.
Yeah. That's a sigil mug.
Sigil mug, guys. So, John, an absolute pleasure chatting with you. As I said, hope to meet you someday in the flesh.
Yeah.
And until next time, folks. John, where can people find you online and your musings?
Jeez, all over the place. There's rome.ro. There's romero.com. There's romerogames.com. There's on Twitter, Romero, the Romero on Instagram. You know, the Romero on Facebook. You know, like everywhere. I think if you just do a Google for my name, you'll find somewhere that you'll find information.
Yeah, guys, I don't think you can really miss him if you type in John Romero.
Yeah.
So until next time, that has been me, your host, Richard Martin, and you can find me on the usual. So I'll see you in the next episode. Take care.
All right, see ya.
End of line.